Hello, hello, hello.
Okay, RuPaul.
I didn't even think about that.
I mean, she stole it anyway, so.
Oh. You know, my brain immediately just went to when you said that was, hello, designers. My Tim Gunn moment.
Well, guys.
Gather round.
Well, guys, we finally have a rental house. Kind
Excellent.
Of talked a
we
little bit
that.
About it off and on. But I finally... We finally have a little bit of housing security, and it feels really good. It'll have already happened by the time this episode comes out, but we're signing the paperwork and getting the keys and everything tomorrow on Monday. And I'm really excited. I know I don't sound super excited, but
no, you don't.
I'm tired.
You sound pretty bummed, actually.
We've been packing all day. Well, not all day. We've been packing.
I'm gonna say. You were not packing all
no,
day.
No, I was
because I got at least 4 notifications that you were playing Overwatch. So
I packed in the morning for about an hour, and then after I ended the stream early, and then we packed for another hour and a half or 2 hours before dinner. But it's been really productive. We've gotten a lot packed, which is good. A lot of
That's
the
good.
Like bulk of the like all almost all of the book, all of the DVDs and like media cabinet stuff, because the clothes will be easy, and then it's mainly then just the kitchen stuff and then all the odds and ends, the board games. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to be too bad, I don't think.
It is so funny, like having had, like I said earlier, that having that conversation about like I'm the kind of poor who needs to be ready to move at any moment. And so like I literally still have things in boxes from when we moved in here a year ago.
Oh yeah.
Because I'm like,
I mean, we still have stuff that never got unpacked when we moved in 2020, because we had so much housing insecurity because he was talking about selling the house that first year that we moved in. So we're like, okay, well, we're not gonna unpack the rest of our stuff. We're not gonna put up any posters. We're not gonna settle in here.
Yep.
Because I don't know when you're gonna pull the rug out from under us. But
well, even having talked to our roommates and like having this, like, right now we are settled in that we are going to probably stay here for 5 years, get our debt paid off, get our situation sorted out, and hopefully it will be a buyer's market at that point and we can buy a house or find a better rental situation. Because we were working out the apartment that they had been renting 5 years ago. They looked at the cost of what rent was today.
Uh-huh.
And it's gone up 60% in 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's like, how, if we're not increasing wages, how are people supposed to afford this?
Exactly. That's, we got so lucky with the place that we got. And we're paying the same amount that I'm paying. We're actually paying less. Because we won't be paying water. And I don't know what we did to get such a lucky break. Hopefully it's lucky. Hopefully there's not some dark secret or something going on here. But the house seems fine. The guy seems fine. It's an old house, so it's a little creaky. But that's okay. And then the kitchen floor is settled in a few places that makes it kind of uneven, but not in a way that feels dangerous, like our floor where we currently live, which is nice. Yeah, as long as nothing, there's not a surprise, I don't know. It was incredible luck. It's kind of funny because we got into the house that we're in now by the same kind of luck of just me being up extra early one day and checking Facebook and just seeing, or no, it wasn't Facebook, it was like Zillow or Trulia or something. Just as soon as our landlord had listed it, I was the first person who reached out to him and was like, hey, I want to see this house. And the reason why I was up that early was because of Zsa, our cat. She woke me up. I can't remember what was going on, but she woke me up early. She's probably just trying to eat my hair or something. And then this time, Mothra broke into our room because we had kicked her out because she likes to get into our front window and just meow really loudly at nothing. There's never anything out there. But she just, like, scream meows out the window. And so we finally just got tired and we just put her out of the room and shut the door. And she managed to push the door open and woke me up again. And then I decided to just go ahead and get up because it was close to my alarm anyway. And checked Facebook, and then there was this house. And everything fell in line to get it. It feels nice to have a win, you know?
Yeah.
Had a hard few years.
I'm trying to remember what I was going to say.
Sorry.
It's gone. Something about my housing situation, but it's fine. Anyway, shall we begin the episode?
Well, you were talking about the rent.
I went through that. I went through all of that. Can't remember.
Okay.
There was a point to what I was going to say and how I led up to it, and I just don't remember what it was.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it happens. You're excited, even though you sound miserable.
I'm just tired.
Well, then let's get this over with.
I'm remembering what it's like physically to be moving and picking things up and putting things down again for several hours.
I now, at the point where I can pick myself up and put myself down, understand that. Well, let's do this. Welcome to The Strange and Unusual, where we discuss the strange and unusual. This is episode 172 of our series, Seeking Out the Weird, the Unexplained, and the Devious from Around the World. I'm Casey.
And I'm Roya.
And this week, I'm going to be telling you the story of a spaceship carrying 12 to 15 little men that landed in rural Kentucky, and how they battled it out with the occupants of a farmhouse.
Okay.
As always, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook, X, Instagram, Threads. All that information will be at the end of the episode. And again, we're always on patreon.com/strangeunusual. There's a poll episode coming up next week. We're excited about that. But yeah, let's get into this. Wee-woo, the heartland of the USA. Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Country Living Magazine, mentions of firearms and shooting at things, bad police work, Steven Spielberg, and hypothetical discussions of animal death, but no actual animal death, to my knowledge.
So, I always kind of wondered, so if aliens are the third kind, what are the first two? Like, one of them is humans. Are they considering men, women, aliens?
I actually looked this up for the last Aliens episode we did. Hold on.
Okay.
I gotta look at my old notes. I mean, I guess I could just Google it. It would probably be faster. But I'm gonna look at my old notes so I can see exactly what I wrote. That was Barney, wasn't it? That episode?
Barney and Betty. Sounds right. But then Barney and Betty are also
the Flintstones. Or the Rubbles.
Yeah, from the Flintstones. So I'm like, was that their names?
Okay, I think it is, and I actually think I remember it going up to, like, fifth kind.
Oh, wow.
But the first one is actually, like, you spot something in the sky. Like, you see something.
Oh, okay.
The second kind is a UFO leaving a physical trace or, like, evidence behind, burns on the ground or broken branches, that sort of thing. And then the third kind is you make contact with a UFO or some alien life.
So entirely different than what I was...
Yeah, no, you're wrong.
I usually am. It's fine.
So, picture it. Kentucky, 1955.
Well, I can't picture 1955, but I can picture Kentucky.
It's August 25th in Christian County near the communities of Hopkinsville and Kelly. And there's a little hootenanny happening at the Sutton Family Farmhouse, which History.com described as, quote, unpainted three-room house without running water, a telephone, radio, TV, or even books, apparently. There's just literally nothing to fucking do in this farmhouse.
Well, except for having a hootenanny.
So we have the family matriarch, Glennie Lankford. She was 50 years old, and she lived there with her three children, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary, 12, 10, and 7, respectively.
Charlton. Okay.
Yep. And she was visited by sons from a previous marriage. We have Elmer, quote, Lucky Sutton, who is 26 years old, and his wife Vera, who is 29. Then there's John Charlie, or J.C. Sutton. He was 21, and he was there with his wife Aileen, who was 27. Aileen's brother, O.P. Baker, and that's O.P., not O.P., like,
okay, yeah.
He was around 30, and then they had friends June and Billy Ray Taylor there also. June was 18 and Billy Ray was 21. And just briefest of side notes, I know nobody's going to remember all these names, but if you do look into this some, sometimes Lucky is listed as Cecil Lucky Sutton. I don't know if Elmer or Cecil are like, one is his middle name and one is his first name, but I will just be calling him Lucky throughout this story. So if you read, if you're like interested in looking into this, you might see him listed as Cecil instead of Elmer. So now our cast of characters has been laid. Lucky, Vera, and the Taylors were actually in the area while touring with a traveling carnival. Some sources said circus, most said carnival. So Glennie makes this big dinner, and then they all sit around, they're hanging out, playing cards, because that's all they can do in this farmhouse. And Billy Ray gets up and goes outside to refill his glass of water, because again, he's got to go out to the well to get water. But while he's out there, he sees something in the sky that freaked him the hell out. Billy Ray, standing there, drinking his cup of water, and then it falls from his hand. According to the account he later gave police, what he saw was a silver flying saucer, saying that it looked like, quote, an egg-shaped wash tub, all lit up like a streak of fire, and, quote, real bright, with exhaust all the colors of the rainbow. He claims that he also heard a hissing noise accompanying this, and he watched it stop in midair and then slowly dropped straight down.
Sounds kind of pretty.
Right? So Billy Ray, of course, runs back into the house screaming, telling the family what he saw, which caused them to laugh at him. And they were all pretty dismissive of what he said that he had witnessed. But he was certain of what he saw, and he seemed really shaken by it. So they managed to calm him down. And about an hour later, the dog outside starts going absolute fucking bananas. He's barking like crazy. So Lucky and Billy Ray go to the back door onto the porch to see what the hell's going on. And they watch as the dog scrambles to hide under the foundation of the house. They look up and they see a glowing shape coming from the direction in which Billy claimed the object landed. And they notice a small humanoid creature emanating this strange glow as if its body were made from, quote, silvery metal, which seems to float rather than walk. The descriptions varied only slightly from witness to witness, generally claiming that the creature was described about three-ish feet tall with a, quote, oversized head, almost perfectly round, with arms extended almost to the ground. Its hands had talons, and its oversized eyes glowed with a yellowish light. Now, Mama Glennie got on her knees and started to pray.
I mean, you know?
By all accounts, she was a pretty devout woman who was genuinely concerned that these creatures had been sent by the devil. So Lucky and Billy Ray do what any two cosmopolitan gentlemen would do. They grab a 20-gauge shotgun and a 22 rifle and try to shoot the creature the American way.
Yeah.
And they report that this creature had its hands up. And a lot of sources describe it, if it's hands up, it's like a surrender, don't shoot sort of situation.
Yeah.
But they started blasting.
Anyway, I started blasting.
It keeps approaching, seemingly unfazed by the gunfire. And the men reported that the shots, when they hit this thing, because they did say they hit this thing, sounded like they were hitting metal, like it was pinging off of it. And they both were like, this was such close range, there was no way we missed. They're men who hunt. Like, they're used to going out and shooting things. They would know, right? So, still, they reported that this thing, they shot at it, right? Knocked it down. Then it did this sick backflip and fled into the darkness, right? Which I just love to imagine. Like, wah-ha! Skitter, skitter, skitter.
Been playing a lot of Tony Hawk.
Doing ollie.
Kickflip. So...
Glennie said that she thought the men were just trying to goof off and rile them up at first, until one of the women screamed, seemingly having seen one of the creatures out the window. She told Isabel Davis, author of Close Encounter at Kelly and Others of 1955, quote, I went out in the hallway and crouched down next to Billy when I saw one approaching the door. It looked like a 5-gallon gasoline can with a head on top and small legs. It was shimmering bright metal like on my refrigerator. So the three kids, the children, Lonnie, Charlton, and Mary, were told to hide under the bed. And one of the wives, I can't remember which one, basically hid with them and was like terrified and didn't want to be involved. But after a time, the adults who were left saw one of these creatures looking at them through a window. Ooh, and one of the guys shot
Signs style.
He shot through the window screen at this thing, just like straight up in the house, just like boom. And Billy Ray decided he was going to go back outside to investigate because the creature ran off. He wanted to see where it went. And this is where it's claimed that as he was walking out the back door, a large hand reached down from the awning and grabbed him by the hair.
Ooh.
The group screamed and pulled Billy Ray back inside. And then Lucky ran out with his shotgun to take a shot at the one on the roof, hitting it and knocking it off the roof with another metallic ping. Billy Ray and Lucky then saw another one in a tree and shot at that one as well. But instead of dropping out of the branches, they said it floated to the ground and then scurried away as the men kept shooting. Another approached again with its hands held up like it was in surrender, which Glennie later suggested may have been its attempt at, like, I want to communicate.
Yeah.
But Billy Ray was like, I don't give a fuck, and shot it anyway. And the creature ran off seemingly unharmed. Now, so there is some discrepancy on how many there were. I said at the beginning of the episode, 12 to 15. That is actually a direct quote from a newspaper. Those at the Sutton Farm never saw more than one at a time. So they suspected there were two or three, maybe. But given the numbers, the number of times that they were seen or like having shot at those things, the papers went ahead with the more sensational version claiming that there were, you know, dozens.
Yeah.
Regardless, they realized the system was not working of shooting, seeing a sick backflip and running away. So they went back inside to regroup. The creatures continued to pop up in the windows and were promptly shot at and, you know, ran off. But they could be heard walking outside and especially moving along the roof. But it doesn't seem like at any point they mentioned that there was an attempt to enter the home or do anything aggressive towards the humans. They were just there. The only thing that could be perceived as aggressive would be the reaching down and grabbing the hair, which could have just been like, you know, when you should ask somebody before touching them.
Yeah.
And well, maybe don't just reach out and touch somebody's hair without asking.
I guess it depends.
Or, you know what? Don't even ask. Just don't touch somebody's hair.
I guess it depends on, like, how... When it's described as grabbing someone's hair, I think that that has a more aggressive vibe than...
I would agree, but they're also in a fearful state. It could have been perceived as an aggressive act when it was just a... Like, that's the thing. And we'll get into this later, but, like, are these just idiot aliens who are curious and reached out to touch hair, and Billy was like, and it grabbed me by the hair!
Yeah.
Did a sick backflip.
I wish that he would have used that exact term. Just a crazy Appalachian man who just had fucking alien show up at his house. I did a sick backflip!
So, this all started at around 7 p.m. So around 11, the group realized this holding up and shooting from the window strategy was not working for them. So they like haul ass, pile into a couple of cars and just get the fuck out. Right. They go directly to the police station. And it was noted by the police that this whole group seemed genuinely terrified. They were saying things like, we need help. We've been fighting them off for nearly 4 hours. Like, come help us. And History.com quoted Police Chief Russell Greenwell saying, quote, these aren't the kind of people who normally run to the police for help. What they do is reach for their guns.
Yeah, these are hill people.
Which they did. That article also mentions that the women and children were hysterical and that one man had a pulse of 140 beats per minute, which was measured by one of the investigators there. And then I watched a video from Fire of Learning that said that the man with the high BPM was actually Billy Ray. Makes a lot of sense given that he was the start of all of this.
Yeah.
And it was particularly noted that no one seemed to be under the influence of alcohol.
Hmm.
Because that's like everybody's first thing was, you've been drinking. No, these guys seemed really sober.
I mean, if they did see something like that, even if they had been drinking, it probably would have scared them sober.
Mm-hmm. So they explain what happened to them. All the stories matched up. So, like, they talked to everybody separately, and everybody had, like, the same story of what went down. Most sources say that they didn't immediately think aliens, but actually described them as goblins. So some places actually will refer to them as the Kelly Hopkinsville goblins. Despite what they might have thought of the story, though. The police, having heard that there was a 4-hour gunfight and holdout, you know, prompted a significant response, and a dozen local police plus 4 military police went out to investigate. And one officer claimed that on his way to the farm, he saw 2, quote, loud meteors in the sky moving in the direction away from the farm as he headed to the scene. There was also a reporter who showed up at 11 o'clock at night. I don't know how they heard about it, but there was a reporter there. In that same Fire of Learning video, they also mentioned that everyone was kind of on edge, like including the police. At one point, someone stepped on a cat's tail and it yowled. And the chief said something like, you never saw so many pistols unholstered in your life. So the investigation didn't turn up much. There were obviously gun casings found all over the place, and at the very least, they confirmed that there had been a shootout of some kind. There was one reported, quote, luminous patch of grass near where one of the creatures was allegedly shot at, but about, it was like a 1.25 feet in diameter. But the spot turned up nothing different from the surrounding grass, really, and it was said that the luminescence only seemed to appear at one specific angle, so it was maybe more like a trick of the light.
Yeah, like dew or something.
Yeah.
Reflect.
Another officer seemed to believe that he saw a green glow off deeper in the woods, but apparently didn't go investigate any further. And from what I read, nobody actually went out to try to find any kind of landing site. So regardless, no hard, fast proof of the visitors having been there, which, again, one article I found, actually, funny enough, was from the Waco News Tribune. Yes, that Waco. Said that Lucky claimed that the reason they didn't find anything was, quote, because they use lights all over the place. You can't see them except in the dark.
How did he know that?
Well, there was also another thing. I didn't mention this, but it's, you know, after I say that, it probably would have been good for me to say. They noticed that once it got dark and they turned the porch lights on, the creatures did not approach at the door. They avoided the light. So, but anyway, by around 2 a.m., the police left with the intent to come back in the morning and wanted to let the family rest. And like, nobody was around. So clearly whatever had spooked them was gone, right? Wrong. You would be wrong. Because by 3 a.m., those fuckers were back. Glennie said that she woke up in her bed and she saw glowing yellow eyes at her window, just watching her with his freaky ass hand held up against the glass. And she quietly called for the family. I can just imagine, like, Lucky, help. So Lucky Sutton enters the room, declared, Mama, I'm gonna shoot that little man. And though Glennie apparently tried to stop him, Lucky did shoot through the window with the same useless effects. That night, he and Billy Ray took turns standing guard with their guns for the next few hours, and the last creature was seen just before or after 5 a.m. And that was the last the family ever saw of them. Police came back the next morning, as they said, looking for footprints or evidence of something on the roof, but still found nothing. The day after the incident, an interview was conducted with the family by a local radio personality and professional sketch artist named Andrew Bud Ledwith, because everybody's got to have a nickname. And
yeah.
The various 7 adult members of the household who had witnessed the creatures approached the house were split into groups and asked to separately provide descriptions of what they'd seen the night before. Isabel Davis, the author I mentioned previously, recounts that Ledwith was impressed that even though the men had been out and away from the farmhouse during the morning, doing various things, one of them went hunting, like, I don't know, they had things to do. But they came back without having time to coordinate with the others. They all had very consistent accounts of what had happened. Ledwith was quoted as saying, quote, these 7 people had told me almost parallel stories and had given me almost identical pictures. It would be impossible for so many people to supply accounts and pictures that tallied so closely unless they first talked together and decided what each feature looked like. But 3 of the men had left very early that morning for Evansville and had not been home throughout the day. These were not interviews where one person could look at another and say, is that what you thought it looked like? No. All 7 were sure of what they had seen, and no one would retract a statement except for Taylor and the nose episode. I will get into that. Even under close cross-examination. And when you see the pictures of how this thing looks, which I do have a picture for you. Let me grab that. Come on. Give me the goods.
It will when it's good and ready.
Copy image. send image.
Aww.
Yeah, he's cute, right?
Yeah, I kind of like him. I like his little spork hands.
You see, that's so funny that you say that. Why they would think goblins, though, looking at
yeah.
them. So yeah, a few different versions. They're all very similar. The one that you'll see and the one that I've sent you now, Roya, that is the most popular is figure 10. And it notes that there was no indication of sex or gender. There is no nose or neck. The ears are long and swept back, extending off the top of the head. Eyes were glowing, yellow with a white rim, set about 6 inches apart. The mouth, if there was one, which I thought was an interesting note, was just a thin line. The upper body was detailed as well-muscled, extending into a, quote, spindly waist with thin, stick-like legs. I don't know if you've watched Our Fly Means Death yet.
No.
But there's a part where Lucius is telling the story of Pinocchio and goes, my legs are sticks! And that's like all I could think of when I read that line. But anyway, so nobody took note of any feet, though one description said that they might have looked like suction cups. So if they did have feet, there weren't a lot of descriptions, but the hands were described as being on extended on long arms nearly to the ground and were largely out of proportion with talons and webbing between an unknown number of fingers. And it was actually, I have written down, the History Uncovered podcast called them spork hands.
I mean, they look exactly.
Because that is what they look like.
They look like spork hands.
And looks like what they give you at Taco Bell when you order like a salad.
I want some KFC.
There you go. But it said that the figure 10 picture was so accurate to what they saw that Glennie couldn't bear to look at it. So, like I said, the stories that the family told were so consistent, and even the children kept the story straight. Soon, the story was picked up by papers across the country where they became sensationalized. One example being the 12 to 15 that I mentioned in the intro, but another example comes from Evansville Courier with the headline, Little Green Men Harass Kentucky Farm Family, which, despite nothing about the witness statements saying that the creatures were green, they were silver. That headline captured the turn of phrase in the cultural zeitgeist, basically.
Yeah.
And that's why we say little green men now, because of this incident.
Even though they were
and green. Yes. Yeah. In case you were wondering, they do mention on the History Uncovered podcast that there was a neighbor who did hear the sounds of these gunshots and could verify that it did happen. And it was also mentioned in the Country Living magazine article that a neighbor about a quarter mile north of them noticed lights in the woods behind the farm. And they figured they were flashlights, you know, maybe they're out looking for one of their pigs or something that had gotten out. And so they weren't like overly concerned with seeing lights in the woods. Also, quote, later, when he would hear gunshots, he imagined they were dealing with a bobcat preying on their livestock.
Probably not impossible, especially for
probably not
Kentucky.
So as the story spread, obviously, reporters, UFO enthusiasts, and curiosity seekers all sort of just descend on the Sutton farmhouse, trespassing on the property, being awful. Some were empathetic and genuinely interested in the family story, but most treated this traumatizing family event as a joke, often ridiculing and disrespecting the family and their property by taking things and just calling them souvenirs. Some people were having picnics on the property, and others were directly just walking into the house uninvited to look around.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I love when people like think about the 50s and stuff and they go, it was a better time. I was like, I don't think it was. I don't think it was. They put up no trespassing signs, and there was some amount of police intervention to try to deter the thousands of people that showed up, but it didn't stop them from coming. One source I read said that the family did end up leaving the home after about 10 days, but most sources were saying that they actually began charging people to come onto the property. And it was after they started charging people, suddenly they were making it up for attention. It's a money grab. But they only did this after days of police not being able to remove these intruders from their home. And others even said that after they did this, they were run out of town. But I didn't see any evidence of that being true. However, Geraldine Stith, Lucky's daughter, told Country Living years later that Glennie ended up selling the farmhouse and moving into an apartment in town because she felt safer around more people. And she talked about how it affected her Uncle JC also, saying he couldn't hold down a job anymore. Saying he couldn't hold down a job anymore. It psychologically messed with him. Either way, it's said that many of, if not all of the witnesses, grew reluctant to speak on the matter publicly. Again, Geraldine commented, quote, "My daddy didn't like how people treated him once the story got out. People made fun of him. It was traumatizing. Still to this day, the witnesses who are alive are afraid to talk." As expected, most claimed their story was a hoax. Family members as recent as 2002 maintained that it was something Lucky never joked about and was still terrified by until his dying day.
Wow.
And yeah, I think Geraldine mentioned in an article that I read that he took her and her siblings back to the farmhouse in 1969 and tried to show them where it had taken place. And the article said, "Long since abandoned, the property still held the well, plus a strange circular impression in the ground where Lucky thought the spacecraft must have landed that night." Isabel Davis, after meeting the members of the family, does not believe they'd have any reason to lie. And the History.com article says that Davis's strong impression after meeting Miss Lankford was one of a somber, no-nonsense matriarch who abhorred the limelight and had no reason to lie. None of the witnesses, Davis noted, had any history of making, quote, preposterous allegations. They had no reason to construct a story and report it. And then, you know, suddenly I'm annoyed by these thousands of people. Like, it just didn't make sense for this family to do that. They weren't those sorts of people.
Yeah.
The incident did eventually end up getting the attention of the U.S. Air Force. The UFO investigation program, Project Blue Book, which is a whole other episode, started to get involved, but it seemed like it was never officially investigated beyond checking in with the military police from Fort Campbell, who had been on the scene that first night. So they didn't take it very seriously either.
I mean,
but
probably just think that it was just a weird anomaly.
Probably. So if it was a hoax, what actually happened? There's some debate on whether or not these police officers actually investigated properly and that the evidence may have been missed or destroyed during the investigation. Shocking. I know. But most people jump immediately to the obvious culprit, which is Kentucky moonshine. Authorities found no alcohol on the premises that night, even after some admitted to specifically looking for alcohol because of how crazy the story was. They were like, "These motherfuckers, they've been drinking the shine."
Meanwhile, they were like, "Please give us the shine where we can pass the fuck out, and not think about this, and not deal with these little gray guys.
So they even specifically were looking for it. Also, the family drove to the police station, so you'd think that there would be some kind of tell there. You know, that the police would see that either when they walked in or as they were driving back to the farmhouse. Joanne Smithy, vice president and chairperson of the Kelly Little Green Men Days Festival, because of course there's a festival every August 21st. She told Country Living that, quote, "We all laugh at that because Glennie didn't allow alcohol or even cursing on her property. They were very quiet, trustworthy family." And I said at the beginning that she was, you know, devout, so that doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, no.
I'm almost done, I promise.
No, it's okay.
In September of 2022, Betsy Phillips wrote for the Nashville Scene that she makes a sort of tongue-in-cheek commentary on the farmhouse being surprisingly close to the train tracks. She says, quote, "So I texted Carter Newton, the archivist at the Tennessee Central Railroad Museum, a copy of the sketch made from the description of the creatures that Sutton had given, and I asked him, is there anything railroad-related that this could be? He texted me back, could be an illuminated switch stand. If you Google those, they make for an interesting possibility, but it's not one Newton was sold on, since switch stands tend not to attack houses." There's not a single report in the Tennessee Central Archives of one behaving this way. You never know. Those switch stands, they're gonna get you. Sounds like something out of Doctor Who, honestly.
Yeah.
There's also some compelling theories. The whole thing kind
of sounds like a thing out of Doctor Who.
It does. Yeah.
Especially just the light peeking into windows.
Yeah.
Are you my mummy?
Yeah, so there's some compelling theories that they were some kind of animal.
Oh, yeah, looking at them, I can, especially the old ones, I can kind of see the switch stand to...
Yeah.
To creature design connection.
But some of the animals that they theorize about are that, you know, Billy Ray and Lucky worked for the carnival. Maybe they brought back some monkeys.
But monkeys have a really obvious gait.
Yeah.
Like primates in general, and, like I don't know, are lesser primates, you know, animals that have the capability to run on all fours but also run on hind legs have a very specific way of movement in both of them.
One of the things I'm about to mention when we get into one of the other animals is how they comment on it moving, which is that its legs were very, like, it seemed to move more from the hips and its legs didn't bend like knees. So it was like a shifting back and forth sort of walk, and that it moved faster on its hands than it did on its feet, if it had feet. It seemed like it was floating.
Maybe it was.
Maybe it was.
That's why there are no little suction prints in the
That's
mud.
Right. There was another suggestion from a police officer. If you can believe this police officer suggested, might have been a cat.
Yep. All three of my cats look like that.
Yeah.
They all have spork hands.
One of the most popular theories, however, is that the family was mistaken in identifying a family of great horned owls. Not unlike the story of the Flatwoods Monster, actually. Different episode. Sorry. Another time, guys. But the large yellow eyes, the long, quote, ears, the talons, the quick Google search for a great horned owl, generally... You'd see they're 19 to 35 inches tall, which meets that 3 feet tall sort of vibe. And if they're scared, they might exaggerate that a little bit more. So, you know, and as Betsy Phillips pointed out in the Nashville Scene article, owls walking on the ground look weird as fuck.
Yeah, they do.
End quote.
They do look weird.
So the theories go that, like, the dog that was barking might have threatened these owls somehow, and that they were coming to defend themselves against the dog, and then the people got involved and it became this big thing. The raising of hands that they say they saw is also consistent with how the great horned owl threatened position is. They raise up their wings to look bigger.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they again walk super fucking weird.
Yeah, owls walk like they were never intended to walk. Like,
yeah, and they shift from their hips, not from, like, they don't have knees. So it's very plausible, except for, you know, they aren't bulletproof and they don't make a metallic sound when they're shot.
Yeah.
I assume.
I don't think so.
But I don't know.
I can't say that I've shot very many owls.
They don't do sick backflips?
I don't think they do sick backflips, and I'm pretty sure that it would be blood and feathers.
And they don't glow.
I mean,
except for
their eyes.
Unless you believe that all birds are government drones, then it could have been a gray horned owl. And well, actually, you know, it's funny. They do the opposite of glow, though, right? Because they're literally evolved to blend in with their surroundings and are camouflaged so that they don't... Their eyes reflect, but they don't glow.
Especially if they were avoiding the light.
But also, like, these people lived in a rural area. You'd think they'd fucking know what an owl looks like.
Yeah, especially if they're common in the area.
Yeah. And fear can alter perception, as I mentioned before, but, like, all seven adults for an entire night? And we're not even accounting for the fact that in August at 7 p.m., it's probably still light outside.
Yeah.
So... I don't know. I don't know if I get why people point to the owl. And there are pictures of the little guy compared to a great horned owl. And you can see how they get there. But I don't know, man. As for the ship in the sky, I already mentioned that one officer saw two meteors on his way to the farmhouse. There are So the police officer saw them. There's actually other witnesses who saw and reported there being a meteor shower that night. But the suggestion is that Billy Ray... was not familiar with this and became so distressed when he saw the meteor that he just assumed it was something terrifying.
Oh, Chicken Little over here.
Yeah, well, we're getting into the, like, space race with Russia at this point, right? Sputnik was 57. So there's all that. Then the dog starts wigging out, which I just, as I said that, like, is wigged out one of those, like, secretly problematic terms?
I don't.
If it is, don't come for me. I don't know. I'm going to look into it after this episode. But the idea is, if he was so worked up and then the dog started and all these things start falling into place, was this just a case of, like, a microscopic mass hysteria moment?
Hmm.
I don't know. So that is the story of the Kelly Hopkinville encounter. Director Steven Spielberg, little guy, you might not have heard of him.
Yeah, never.
He investigated the incident. He was developing a movie that became the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And he then later intended to make a film called Night Skies based on the story. But after filming Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Spielberg allegedly wanted something less elaborate and violent. And so he changed the story to a more relatable story of extraordinary friendship and loyalty. Little film that we know as E.T.
Duh.
If you are interested in knowing more about this from the perspective of the family, Geraldine did go on to chronicle her family's experience in the books Alien Legacy from 2007. And there was one in 2015 called The Kelly Green Men, Alien Legacy Revisited.
I've never heard 2007.
I know, I started saying it and I went, nope. You've never heard somebody start to fuck up like that?
Not to my knowledge.
You don't talk to many people, do you?
I mean, not that specifically. Not that I can recall. If it's happened, I don't remember it.
Anyway, so ending my little story here with a quote from Geraldine. My family went through something, whether it be paranormal or extraterrestrial, that changed their lives forever. I just want people to realize the terror that they went through that night.
Yeah, I mean, if they were, like, quiet, sort of out-of-the-way country folk, then, yeah, that just, like, completely opened up their mind to there being more out there, which is, if you're not ready for it and you're not, like, educated enough on it, is terrifying.
Yeah.
You know? Like we're talking, like, they went in there and their only experience with this sort of thing would have been, like, War of the Worlds. Like, yeah. That sounds pretty fucking bad.
And that's, or the day the earth stood still.
And that's even if they had listened to that, you know?
Yep.
So I could definitely understand. I mean, I think that if I saw aliens land in my backyard right now, I'd be pretty weirded out too.
Yeah, the day the earth stood blah, blah, blah. The day the earth stood still was in 50 or 51, I think. So that would have been pretty recent for them.
Yeah. Also, flipping your wig is not a racist
term. It sounds like a beatnik thing, so I don't know.
It is a phrase derived from Middle French.
Oh.
And in the American slang of the mid-20th century, the word wig was moving into new territory. Wig became a word for the mind, and to wig out was to lose one's composure or reason.
Gotcha. It sounds like something somebody would say in the 50s, which is why I threw it in. Flip your wig. That's what I was thinking of. That sounds like beatnik shit.
Do you think you've ever seen anything in the sky before?
Are you asking?
I'm asking you.
Me, if I've seen aliens?
Yeah, or like just anything that you were like, man, that's really fucking weird in the sky. Or I mean, I guess aliens, UFOs. That don't call
nothing
them UFOs
comes
anymore.
To mind. I'm also in a really high military area here.
So you'd probably just, like, write off anything as being military.
Yeah, I see shit, weird shit all the time. But even when I was growing up, I don't remember. I remember, was it Hale Bopp? We went to see that at the observatory when I was a little kid.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen anything either, to my knowledge. Now, I've seen some of the videos and stuff like that.
Oh, some of those videos freak me the fuck out.
Yeah, especially the one, what was it? I can't remember what it's called now. But it was these pilots who were flying a new jet or something, like a military equipment. And something popped up on their radar and it was so fast that they couldn't catch it.
Did we talk about that in an episode?
We might have. And then...
I feel like Canary Islands or something sounds right.
And then they caught up to it because it had just stopped. But then there wasn't anything there, but it was still picking up on the sensor. And, like, just weird shit like that, man. And, I mean, now, like, the governments in the U.S. have, or in the world, have all but basically said, like, yeah, they're shit, man. Like,
yeah, we don't want to freak you out, but
but, like, at this point, you... at this point, I would just accept our new alien overlords. Like, what? It can't be worse.
Yeah, it can't be worse.
Like, it really.
I was saying earlier to the household here that I'm pretty agnostic about aliens. Like, pretty agnostic about aliens in that I believe that they are out there. There's almost no possible way that we are the only. I think it's ridiculously self
aggrandizing.
Yeah, to think that we're the only things in the universe. I just think that Earth is probably the Florida of all planets and nobody wants to come here.
Yeah. Or, like, they tried and then they got chased off by some military situation, or they have a prime directive. Is it being,
yeah, well, that, or is it a situation of, like, there are so many, somebody, I can't remember which video I saw this in that I watched, but it was, like, somebody was saying, if something did come here, why do we assume that they would come to the humans? Like, there might be, like, trading shit happening between the octopi and aliens.
Maybe.
Like,
dolphins,
yeah. Or
whales.
The faked? Wow. I just came out of Wisconsin and Minnesota there for a second. Sorry. My bag. what was I saying? Shit. Oh, the fact that, like, for every organism, or, like, every cell in the body of a human, there are 10 organisms, microorganisms attached to it. So maybe they've made a deal with the 90% of us that isn't us, and this 10% meat sack has no idea what's going on. Like, there are so many possibilities.
Yeah, I think I lean toward that there's some kind of, like, there's, in my mind, there's two sort of ideas that I can, that I regularly...
There are two aliens inside you.
That I regularly consider. And one is that if there are aliens that are reaching Earth, that they have some kind of a prime directive where they can, like, live among people or among creatures or whatever, but that they can't impact the humans or creatures that they are around. So the prime directive from Star Trek style.
Yeah.
Or
Picard was really good at that.
They all were. or that the other alien societies that are close enough to us are in a similar, like, range of technology. So they're also reaching out and they're also trying to communicate, and they have space exploration, but it's not, like, far enough advanced yet to do everything that it needs to. It's sort of like, you know, we put somebody on the moon, we've got, you know, the Mars rover, we've got drones going out places in space and things like that, but that they're in a similar capacity where they're just finally starting to be able to reach out. Now, that's not to say a galaxy away, there's not the Jetson, you know, like a super advanced, you know, folding up space cars kind of thing going on, but their technology might be so advanced, but still not advanced enough to hop to another galaxy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, because that would be so hard, that would take so much time. Like, even if hyperspace were a real thing, that's a lot. It's a lot of time. Elise and I were talking about black holes the other night, and how I'm so curious about what's on the other side. Is there another side? Does it end, or is it just an endless black vacuum of nothing? You know? Like, what if it just spits you out on the other side into a different reality or an alternate universe, or...
I don't know, man.
They make noise. They shouldn't make noise. Like, it's so weird. Space is...
10 out of 10 spooky.
Space is so spooky. Space and the ocean freak me the fuck out.
It's so cool.
I don't know. Like, it's wild to me that, like, what the I don't know how accurate it is or not anymore, but I always remember, I used to hear that, like, we've explored more of space than we have of our own oceans.
I believe that.
And I'm like, it's so wild. It's crazy we're still finding new species. Like, just on Earth, like on land. It's like
in the Amazon, yeah.
Like, and different things like that, or species that we thought were previously extinct that weren't, and we're finding, you know, finding them again, and that's super cool. But like, yeah, like we don't know what's really down beyond where we can go, technologically speaking, into the ocean. We don't know what it's going to be like down there.
Well, that's why Ocean Gate really wanted to go.
No. No, it is not.
But, no, it is not.
But, like, and then just the how different the aquatic life gets, like, the oceanic life mm-hmm. is when you get so far into the deep sea that we have even seen, of just, like, they don't look like they belong on Earth. Like, it's so weird. Like, comparatively. Like, a goblin shark next to a great white shark. Like, yeah. The goblin shark does not look like it should exist in reality. And it does.
Yep.
But
There are fish with lights on their heads.
Yeah. Like, there are fish that you can just see through.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, there are fish like that in caves. Like, just close all the way at the surface. But, like,
there are fish like that in the pet store.
Yeah. I mean, like, bigger fish.
I know.
Like, than the blind, like, cave fish and stuff. But, yeah, or, like, pelican eels. Oh, my God, they're horrifying. And they're not even mm-hmm. that deep. Like, if you've never seen a video of a pelican eel just existing, if you want to be deeply unsettled.
We get it. You've played Dave the Diver.
No, I saw a video of the, I mean, I did. But, like, I saw a video of a pelican eel. And they, like, they fully change shapes into an entirely different creature. It's so weird to watch it move and swim and adjust. Like, even the marine biologists who were looking at it saw it in, like, a different shape than they had seen it before. Mm. And they were like, did we just find a new thing? And then it like, flipped around and, like, flattened itself back out again. And, like, it's a fucking pelican eel. It's horrifying. Like, they're even, like, unsettled by it. Like,
I mean, even just jellyfish.
Yeah, just period.
Like, yeah.
Like a man-o-war. Like,
I have a friend who's convinced that narwhals are mythical creatures. I'm like, they're really not. There's the fucking video. Nope, I don't believe it. And at this point, it's like a joke, but they still say it all the time. It's pretty funny.
Thanks for joining us today as we talked about the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter. And now we want to hear from you. Send your stories, your questions, and your feedback to strangeunusualpodcasts@gmail.com. If you're sending a story, we just ask that you put listener story in the subject line so we can sort through those a little more easily. Do you have any encounters of any kind? First through fifth kind?
Yeah.
We'd love to hear about it, please. Pictures, tell us all the details. I would love to hear it and be horrified at the same time about it.
Yeah.
What's your favorite deep sea creature? Everybody should have one. It's like dinosaurs at this point.
I just saw, was it a meme or something earlier that was like, when you become an adult, nobody asks you what your favorite dinosaur is anymore. And I was like, oh.
It's a good icebreaker. Let everybody in the room know you're autistic.
Roya, what's your favorite dinosaur?
Probably a pterodactyl.
Yeah.
I used to really like Triceratops too.
That's my guy.
And I think that it is fully because of Land Before Time.
Absolutely.
I love Sarah.
Oh, that, and I really like the scene in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I like brontosauruses, too, because of Jurassic Park.
Where she gets out of the Jeep and she starts digging through shit.
Yeah.
And Jeff Goldblum says, that's a big pile of shit.
But I like the brontosauruses, too, because of the, like, intro of Jurassic Park. Like, they just look so mm-hmm. regal and peaceful and gentle, even though they're gigantic creatures.
Yeah. You can also find us on Instagram and Threads at strange_unusual_podcast or on our personal accounts, Roya Rampage and Calamity Casey. You can find us on X at _strange_unusual, at Calamity Casey, and at Roya Rampage. We're on Facebook. If you just search for the Strange Unusual Podcast, look for our logo. Roya is streaming on Twitch and, I don't know, Kick or YouTube or something else. It's just those plus Roya Rampage. I'm sometimes there.
Yeah.
Not really, though. I'm there on days that I'm off and Roya plays something I'm not ethically opposed to. Then you will find me on the chat and on Twitch as well. Did you ever have you played Baldur's Gate at all recently?
Not in a bit, no.
Okay. Anyway, patreon.com/strangeunusual. We have a poll episode coming up next week. We'll have another fresh poll available at the start of December, so make sure that you go check that out. It's just $2 a month, but if you cannot support us financially, we just ask that you rate, review, subscribe, smash that like button, all those lovely things that you do on the internet. If you do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think, we will read that out loud with your consent. As long as this is 5 stars, we'll read it, unless it's racist or super gross.
Yeah.
So, with that, I'm gonna let Roya go to bed because she looks like she's about to pass out.
I'm really tired.
And bye.
Bye.